don't know if you know the Devil's Advocates, but the show is kind of a big deal.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Don't blame it on Fancy Brian. This one's all mine. A little musical request. A little dedication going out to Roger Stone, the dirty political trickster.
You never, ever have to apologize for Def Leppard.
Pour some sugar on me, I'd be apologizing.
Come on, man.
You know, it's mood music. You got to be in the right mood.
It puts you in the right mood. That's the best part. I saw them in Heart. It's awesome.
Well, anyways, here's why I play it. Lordy, there's tapes. Roger Stone invited documentarians into his life for a couple of years, and they were there right as he was fleeing D.C. in January 6, 2021, and they were there to capture his efforts to, let's just say, get everybody pardoned. The Stone Plan, they called it. A little bit more here from the Post, and then I've got some other coverage because there's lots and lots of videotapes and plenty of takes. Stone has been friends with Trump for more than 30 years. He worked as a consultant at Trump's businesses in the 1980s and served as an informal advisor to Trump's 2016 campaign. And that year, Stone founded Stop the Steal. And do you know what Stop the Steal meant in 2016? Stop trying to steal the convention from Donald Trump. Because when they got to Cleveland, Dom and I were at the RNC. There was still a movement afoot to cast Trump out as the nominee and just grab somebody. It's our own party, right? The RNC is a private party. Who cares if they follow their own rules? They can change the rules. And there was a movement afoot. But Trump persevered. Apparently, Paul Manafort was there to help shine a light upon, you know, the process, the nomination process. Apparently he'd done something like that kind of work before in the Ukraine, something about the Ukraine and Russia. But anyways, Stone's relationship with Trump took a lower profile after it came under scrutiny by special counsel Robert Mueller, who probed Stone's communications regarding WikiLeaks after it published hacked Democratic Party emails. Stone was eventually convicted on charges of impeding a congressional investigation of Russian interference into the 2016 election. He was sentenced to 3 years and 4 months in prison. Now compare that sentence with the sentence of some of the January 6th insurrectionists. You know, 90 days, 60 days, house arrest, probation. He got 3 years plus.
And keep in mind, anybody who's ever been in political corruption serving time is significant in and of itself.
Well, there were 34 indictments leveled in the Mueller report. So for those that say, you know, Mueller report, it's totally been discredited. No, there are a few commuted sentences, a couple of pardons, but there are a lot of convictions. Roger Stone was sentenced to 3 years and 4 months in prison, but Trump commuted the sentence in July of 2020. Never sat in prison for a single day, right? Was supposed to go, and then Trump commuted it. The filmmakers followed Stone as he sought a full pardon. Stone said in his statement to the Post that its questions for this article were typical of the Washington Post coverage over the last 2 years, in which your newspaper insisted that I was a Russian intelligence asset in league with WikiLeaks to aid the Trump campaign. A lie! You were convicted. You might have been commuted, but you were convicted, at least impeding the investigation. And who does the cover-up if they didn't commit the underlying crime? I'm just asking. A day before the announcement that Stone's sentence was commuted, a Danish filmmaker's footage shows he told his staffer, Enrique Alejandro, that Trump should use the powers of his office to reject official results in that year's election and secure victory in the courts with help from federal judge who owed him fealty. It's going to be really nasty, Stone said at home on January 9, 2020, predicting that Democrats would try to steal the election. If the electors showed up at the Electoral College, armed guards will throw them out, he said, apparently referring to the ceremonial meeting of electors in the state capitals. I'm the president, F you, Stone said, imagining Trump's remarks. You're not stealing Florida. You're not stealing Ohio. I'm challenging all of it. And the judges are judges I appointed. I'm sorry. You know, it's Roger Stone ranting, not always grammatical. On election night, November 3rd, Stone attended a party in Fort Lauderdale thrown by an associate. In a speech, Stone urged Trump supporters to prepare for a disputed result, echoing Trump's own statements. On November 5th, as vote counts in key states slipped away from Trump, Stone coordinated a response during a rapid-fire succession of calls. As filmmakers drove him to his makeshift office in a strip mall, probably an office share with a liposuction clinic, right? Near his home, Stone told one associate to create an account for hunting election fraud on an encrypted email service to avoid surveillance. Dictating text messages, Stone told an aide to resurrect his Stop the Steal campaign. He predicted to another aide that his brand was about to be quite a bit hotter as a result, adding, "We're going to raise money from Stop the Steal. It will be like falling off a log." That day, working from a desk in his office and surrounded by Nixon memorabilia, let's not forget he's got the Nixon tramp stamp. I guess it's not technically a tramp stamp, but he's got Tricky Dick Nixon tattooed between his shoulder blades. That's still very, very awkward. Stone directed aides to recruit retired military and law enforcement officials for Stop the Steal. He told them to monitor a group chat signal titled FOS, Friends of Stone. Tario of the Proud Boys was among the group members. A later shot of Stone's phone showed. So once again, evidence gathered by the documentarians because he's allowing them to film encrypted messages he's sending from his cell phone. The very stuff he was convicted of for withholding from Congress, he's allowing Danish filmmakers to film. I'm telling you, there's a little breakdown here. In his statement to the Post, Stone wrote, "Your assertions regarding my text messages or signal messages only proves the leaking of the partisan January 6th witch hunt or illegal methods of collection on your part." That's him addressing the fact that they videotaped the message over his shoulder because he let them. I never said that. On November 5th, Stone drew up a Stop the Steal action plan that was visible on Alejandro's laptop and footage captured by the filmmakers. So it wasn't just him. They were all sharing. As protesters were mobilized, the plan said state lawmakers would be lobbied to reject official results. That tactic later proved central to Trump's efforts. Also that day, Stone had a 15-minute phone call with Michael Flynn. The video shows they captured that as well. Here's a quote. He told Flynn they could document an overwhelming and compelling fraud in each battleground state and urged him to spread the word on social media. That day, Flynn, Trump's campaign, and his sons Donald Jr. and Eric started using hashtag Stop the Steal on Twitter. Stone and Flynn discussed the need to coordinate with the White House, and opposed demands by Republicans in some states to stop counting votes. Our slogan should be, count every legal ballot. Much better messaging, more positive, Stone said. After an inaudible response from Flynn, Stone replied, "Well, we both know he often does things he shouldn't do." I think they mean Trump, like he can't keep his message discipline.
Amongst other things. I don't think he can keep his discipline with anything.
Well, he must have listened to Stone that day. That evening, Trump gave a speech from the White House briefing room. "If you count the legal votes, I easily win." That was the beginning of his speech that day. So anyways, the filmmakers returned to Denmark on November 4th and 5th and were away from Stone as Trump's efforts gathered momentum. Demonstrations spread while Trump and his advisors lobbied state lawmakers to intervene as Stone had proposed. Though he had privately ordered a revival of his Stop the Steal initiative, Stone publicly played down his role. Stone, who was then still seeking a pardon, wrote in a November 30th blog post that he was not a participant in any of the organizations using Stop the Steal's name in 2020. Denying that he even knew it, right? It's his plan. It's his slogan.
He made it up.
Much media focus instead fell on Alexander, a young right-wing operative who had launched his own Stop the Steal effort and was traveling the country, addressing the crowds with a blowhorn. Better than a soapbox, I guess. Stone acknowledged in his post that he had met Alexander, but he stressed that they were merely talking to anybody who could help fight election fraud. Their connection ran deeper than Stone let on. It's almost like he doesn't tell the truth. The pair had been photographed together at several Republican events in prior years. During a small Stop the Steal protest in Atlanta on November 20th. Don't want to get the dates wrong here. They could be useful in court. Alexander Patchstone in via phone for a speech in which he thanked my friend there, Allie, as in Allie Alexander. Cell phone video from the scene reviewed by the Post shows 8 days later, Alexander visited Stone's home for dinner. And on December 19th, Trump announced on social media that a big protest would be held in Washington on January 6th. Be there, will be wild, he wrote. The next day, wildprotest.com, a site Alexander used to promote plans for the rally, was registered. Are you starting to see a little conspiracy winding up here, folks? I'm just asking. I hope it's worth the read aloud.
They almost overthrew democracy because of the names of their websites and to promote websites. Is that what I'm getting here?
Now, 4 days later, Fancy Brand, yes, they sloganeered, and they got their URLs. On the evening of December 23rd, that's 4 days after the whole wildprotest.com, the White House announced that Trump had pardoned Stone for his conviction in the case brought by Mueller. Alexander celebrated on a live stream promoting the January 6th rally and boasting of what he and Stone could achieve now that we can work together publicly. Roger's fully in the fight now, Alexander said. Roger wasn't allowed to be fully in the fight. We've taken the leash off the pit bull. So this is something Roger and I've been planning for a long time. And finally, he's off the leash. So, you know, it's a knife fight. And your two knife fighters are Allie Alexander and Roger Stone. And you either fight with us or you get slashed. An attorney for Alexander, Paul Kamenier, told the Post that Alexander and Stone were friends and brothers in Christ. Who would Jesus stab? But had no part in violence on January 6th and did not anticipate it. Allie has never participated in a literal knife fight, nor advocated one.
What I know,
a rhetorical knife fight.
What I know is that just, you know, from what you're reporting, is that when faced with any sort of, I don't know, actual pressure at all, Roger Stone will pack up his suits, throw them in trash bags, and run as far as he can.
I'd like to think I'd run in there even if I didn't have a weapon.
What a coward.
Stone was added to the top tier of the lineup for Alexander's wild protest, which eventually joined forces with a parallel January 6th organizing effort led by Women for America First. By December 30th, Stone had launched a January 6th fundraising drive. Of course he did, because it's all about the grift, urging supporters to help fund the rallies and pay for his private security. The fundraising page suggested donations up to $2,500, which could be made to reoccur. Kind of like the Trump campaign, right? Once they got your credit card number, they're just going to assume you want the reoccurring fixture.
And they're going to keep asking and asking and asking.
Now, apparently, the effort raised about $40,000, according to a person familiar with it. The funds were directed to an online account in the name of a lawyer who worked extensively with Stone, according to a person who spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss confidential matters. And in early January, the filmmakers rejoined Stone as he and thousands of others poured into D.C. for rallies aimed at pressing VP Mike Pence and Republicans in Congress to block the certification of Joe Biden's victory. Stone stationed himself close to the White House at the five-star Willard, which at the time was a hive of pro-Trump activity. He took room 500, a one-bedroom suite with a living room. Elsewhere in the hotel, Trump's outside lawyers, including Giuliani and, there's his name, John Eastman, that's the coup memo guy, ran their separate command center from another one-bedroom suite. Alex Jones, the InfoWars founder, was in one of the Wildered's higher-end suites. Apparently, Alex Jones got the presidential suite.
That's how you know it's credible.
Where he met with Flynn and Stone on January 5th. Photographs posted online show, so they were also documenting that. It's like you almost get all the co-conspirators together at the same place at the same time. Took pictures, took photographs. Hell, you got video. Lordy, there's tapes. Come back, more Devil's Advocates, more coverage. Right here, Roger Stone. I think he could be a key witness.
He loves you and he needs money.